Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Hopefully you're hearing me loud and clear. We're calling in from Chicago. It's beautiful up here. If you're up here in the Northwest, up in the Midwest, it's beautiful up here. I have to check Alice. It's nice in Michigan as it is here in the Chicago area. But it's broadcasting live from here, and we appreciate the opportunity for you to dial in and you being a part of the broadcast each and every week. For many of you, this is the first time, and we appreciate you dialing in and being a part of the broadcast, telling others about it. We have an exciting program. You know what? Many of you have been wondering, what's in that SRP? What's in that service and release premium schedule? Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had a couple industry experts, Austin Tillman and David Stevens, on the broadcast from United Capital Markets. They were sharing with us perspective about what goes into that, and they started to get into something, and wow, did it reveal that maybe, just maybe, not everybody understands what is involved in the calculation and what goes into calculating the servicing released premium schedules that we all look at. So we asked them to come back, and we are thrilled to have them on during the Hot Topics segment to really go in and explain to you what you're leaving on the table, folks. There may be some money there. We're going to find out about how much, where it's at. But we're going to have Austin Tillman, David Stevens on in the broadcast. Very exciting, very good stuff. Also, special thank you to United Guarantee, who's our sponsor, as well as A La Mode. These two sponsors make this program possible in part, along with a whole lot of effort, like Alice and Andy and Joe and myself. We are all sponsors of this thing. But a special thank you out to our paid sponsors, United Guarantee and A La Mode, for being a part of it. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later in the broadcast. Joe Farr is, guess what? He is at the Texas NBA. We're not going to get into what he's doing, because I think he was playing golf last week, too. But he's out there enjoying the Texas Mortgage Banking Convention and is out of the office. And he says to send his greetings to all of you. For those of you that you saw his post about that, he's at the TMBA, and we appreciate Joe's contribution to the broadcast. It's always so valuable. A lot of information going on today, and I was looking for an update from Joe, and I got some basic information off the website that's going on. Probably the most significant the economic developments coming up this coming week is existing home sales. See what that data looks like. The consensus, we're going to see 5 million. Prior to that, it was 4.92 million. And so it'll be see where that's going to be at. That data is coming out on Wednesday, as well as on Wednesday is the FOMC minutes, and we'll see what that is. I don't have any data on the consensus, what's anticipated, but you can't get data points. What am I thinking about? There, we'll find out what they have to offer. Always interesting potential for surprises. Jobless claims come out on Thursday at 8:30 Central, or that is East Coast time, and that's anticipated to see a consensus of 350,000 jobs. So it's really interesting to see what will be going on there, as well as new home sales will also be coming out on Thursday, and anticipated to be 425,000. The prior report is 417. So the jobless claims are relatively unchanged as anticipation, maybe slightly off. And then, of course, the new home sales data is anticipated to be up. Now, Friday has got the durable goods orders will be out, and it's the consensus is 1.5 last time. That's a positive number. Prior, it was a minus 6.9%. So it'll be interesting to see where we're at. We're watching the prices drop a bit on Fannie, looking at interest rates drop. It looks like they're crawling back up a bit. I'm looking at the notes of what's just out here. I'm logged into MBS Quote Line's website. By the way, what a great website, just really succinct. But the bottom line is the information that's just out is really that prices are unfavorable. Pricing was at a risk again. MBS prices were down, and then MBS's prices were up and then down. So we've got a little bit of volatility going on today. You really need a service like MBS QuoteLine if you're going to be out there trying to quote and manage this. Because remember, how do markets respond? They respond quickly to bad news. They respond a little bit more slowly to the good news. So when bad news hits, you got to have a service like this. MBS QuoteLine is one of the ones we're proud to have as a sponsor of the broadcast. And we wish Joe Farr a great time out there. And a special thank you to all the people at MBS QuoteLine for what they do to help us stay on top of what's happening in the market. Folks, we're going to be right back. Remember, we've got Paul. We're going to have Paul Mallo coming on and talking right after the ad break, give us an update on the headlines. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS QuoteLine can eliminate these frustrations. MBS QuoteLine monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS QuoteLine, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS QuoteLine can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you be with us again. Back from the ad break and with us, just dialed in, take time away from his keyboard to follow up on all the stories he's reporting, is Paul Mallo of Inside Mortgage Finance, IMF.com, IMFnews.com. Paul, good to have you with us on the broadcast. By the way, Paul, mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot of feedback from our listeners how much they enjoy having you on the broadcast, and hopefully you're seeing a surge in the number of people subscribing. But it's good to have you with us. What's in the news today?
Well, we are actually seeing subscribers go up. That's always nice. The sign-ups for www.imfnews.com. I think it's 3W. I always get that screwed up. What's in the news today? We have an exclusive about J.P. Morgan Chase. Apparently, as everyone knows, they dumped their broker channel 3 years ago, but they remained in the USDA rural housing program using loan brokers in there. And we just got an exclusive memo where basically Chase is telling brokers that that's it. They're not going to use them anymore in this rural housing program.
Wow.
And the reason that's sort of interesting is that they're the largest player in that market, USDA lending. We're trying to get some numbers on their broker share. But the bigger story here isn't necessarily they're, you know, finally getting out of the brokerage wholesale channel. Is that we've had a number of people tell us, you know, all these regulations are just making it a hassle to deal with brokers. And that doesn't, you know, portend well for the broker segment, even though, you know, we hear that broker hiring is up. Brokers are, you know, still trying to hire LOs. Their market share is stabilized, according to some numbers that Inside Mortgage Finance came out with last week, which is in our flagship newsletter, Inside Mortgage mm-hmm. Finance. You know, broker market share is stabilized right now between 10 and 11%. That compares to about 35%, you know, at the peak of the market 7 years ago. I mean, there's a lot of good brokers out there who feel they're still paying the price for, you know, being portrayed as the bad guy in this crisis, even though there's plenty of bad retail lenders who made a ton of crappy subprime loans, like, you know, Associates, and of course, you know, Ameriquest was the King Kong of it all. Countrywide mm-hmm. had a lot of crappy retail. I mean, you know, there's a lot of retail damage out there that, you know, brokers, of course, you know, they don't and should not escape blame free in this crisis, but, you know, they, like everyone else, you know, we're doing poor, you know, poor sales, poor underwriting, even though brokers don't really underwrite. But anyway, it sort of moves that story forward. And there's a lot of, you know, angry trade group officials in the broker segment that are, you know, trying to fight back, trying to clear their name, and trying to get a fair shake for that community, feeling that, you know, the industry needs brokers, consumers need brokers because they offer another channel. And there's still this growing fear that despite certain deconsolidation, that the big banks still dominate the business with, you know, some exceptions. So that's one story we have on www.imf.com.
That's a big story. The implications of that story, Paul, are pretty significant. So that's really interesting. Everyone, encourage you guys to grab that one for sure. What else is on the headlines for you?
On the headlines, well, we just crunched our subprime numbers, according to reporting by our reporter, Ben Ivey. Ocwen now has a servicing market share of 33.7%.
Wow.
I mean, it's a large chunk of a shrinking market. That's sort of the story there. But we also found out in our reporting that there's roughly $460 billion in subprime loans outstanding left out there, and the total residential market's about $10 billion. So there's still $460 billion left. You know, I think at the peak we had almost $1 trillion in subprime loans. So the outstandings have been cut in half since the crisis. So that's interesting. We also have apparently Harry Reid's going to push for Cordray's a nomination hearing for him. We'll see if that happens. There's some speculation we got out there by reporter Charles Wisniewski. Apparently, there's talk, you know, whether Mel Watt's going to make it. I mean, I guess that's nothing new, really, but there's some new wrinkles in there, and that's on www.imfnews.com, as well as two more bulk MSR packages have hit the market from Mountain View and Denver. That's a story we've been reporting on quite a bit, is the comeback in the MSR market for new bulk packages, which is, you know, good news for the industry. That's very good news. So, and there's some stuff out there about MBA. They came out this morning with a G fee plan in risk sharing, where, you know, they want to get lower G fees in exchange for lenders taking more risk sharing up front. That's on www.imfnews.com. And there's things along those lines. Bayview's looking at more servicing and NPL acquisitions. So, you know, it's already Monday morning, and there's plenty of news out there on the website, so check it out.
And you're writing this every single day. Like, people get confused that, you know, well, I thought IMF News or Inside Mortgage Finance publishes their flagship, you know, less frequently. That's true, but you have this out every single day, and it's a website you keep up to date. So people need to subscribe to this, Paul. It's really valuable information.
Great, thank you. Yeah, no, the weekly, which has a lot of data in there, is you know, still well read. And but you know, we're sort of the new guy in the block since December, going against some of the other daily competitors. And you know, we got great reviews from a lot of people. A lot of readers love it. So things are going well.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Mel Watts, let's go to that one real quickly, because I just spoke at the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association last week, and, of course, Cordray's from Ohio, so they actually,
right.
I heard some fairly positive from, I think it was Stivers, that was the representative Stivers was speaking, and I talked to him afterwards. He actually spoke fairly confidently. He says, you know, people may not particularly like Cordray, or there may be controversy about his appointment, but they say, you know, it could be a lot worse. But he thinks Mel Watts is dead on arrival when it gets there, and so we'll have to see. So there's more people are pushing for, and I for the first time I heard someone say, who is on the conservative side, the other side, I'll actually say some positive things about Cordray. So we'll have to see, Paul. Lots of interesting data.
Well, the question
is,
how much political capital does the White House want to spend on both these gentlemen? And you know, that's a good question. I still a lot of people still can't believe he would have nominated Watt, and if he thought he had no chance of getting it. And you know, there's a real mixed bag. But the majority of people that we talk to suggest that there's no way Watt's going to get the job or get the vote.
Well,
so.
that's what I was hearing last week in Ohio, and they are actually saying we hope we keep Cordray. And so they're even the conservative elements within the House are saying, yeah, we're going to actually pull for Cordray to come through. So we'll see. Maybe it's just because I was in Ohio. Maybe it's just they're pulling for the hometown.
Well, talking about run for governor, too, in 2 years. That's another on the Cordray story. So
there's lots of angles to these things. And
yeah,
you can get all the angles by going to www. That's those three W's that I always look. So just get us dyslexics crazy. www.imfnews.com. Paul Marlowe, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. And say hi to Guy and John and all the hardworking folks there at Inside Mortgage Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, friend. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go over to the to Alice Alvey, who's up there. Now, Alice, we're talking about weather here in Chicago. What's it like there in Michigan? Do you have the same kind of gorgeous weather we're having here?
Oh, my gosh. We had the most beautiful weekend, Dave. You know, it was just a treasure. One of the things that keeps you in Michigan, you just keep reminding yourself of that when you've got a foot of snow in the winter.
Yeah. Keep you in Michigan, except when it starts, that when you have those other, those winter months, which are going to be just miserable.
Right, right. So it was just a beautiful. We're still in spring over here. So anyway.
Well,
but, yep.
People listen to the radio program now for a weather report, so let's get into the legislative update. So,
yeah, here's the
weather
in the legislative front, right?
That is chilly always.
Give us the weather report here. The NBA NewsLink reported on Senate Bill 949 being introduced as the companion bill to House 1077. That I've been talking about, which to us is great news, that there's a Senate and a House bill together that will address the issue about loan officer compensation that will be in the three-point test for defining if a loan is a QM, right?
Mm.
So we've got a lot surrounding trying to just define a QM, and one of the biggest contentious points is how do you calculate 3 points and determine that a loan will or will not be saleable to Fannie or Freddie at this point. So there's no text available. I've been trying to find stuff on those senators' websites to try and see if they talk a little bit about it. So I'll have more for you next week and in the coming weeks once we actually get some text to see how closely these two bills align. If you remember, House Bill 1077 came out to say we can't double count loan originator compensation in this points test. You can't drill down to the payroll level to pull that number up for determining 3 points. And it also was proposing to say you can't include loan level price adjustments because those are just pass-throughs to the agencies. And so, you know, can we keep that out of the test as well? Otherwise, darn near everything's going to hit the 3 points, you know, or rates
darn
are going to jump a mile. Right. So we're going to watch those very closely because I think those are very important. Now, along that same line, FIFA, Fannie, and Freddie published that they will not be purchasing QM loans effective 1/10/14, which, okay, we all kind of knew that. It wasn't any kind of big surprise. But when I talked with my risk managers working group last week, they're all going, yeah, but if you start backing that up, you know, if you say, all right, can't sell anything to Fannie and Freddie that's above 30 years, you know, that means the product requirements of a QM, that's fine. But what about this three-point test, right?
Exactly.
And my software providers aren't anywhere near ready, mostly because there are still so many unanswered questions. So you really have to start saying, by September applications, I'm on board, I've got my systems checked, because my applications starting around that, you know, fall window are going to have to be ready to be sold to Fannie and Freddie as a QM loan. So we don't have a lot of time here for implementation. I can't stress enough, folks, to, you know, make sure you're working on those things that can be procedurally in policy internally and don't completely rely on solutions from your software systems. I'm happy to help you with those if you're not quite sure where to start. But it is a big issue, so we're going to watch it very closely for you. Also, on the headlines, I attended a webinar this week that FHA put on talking about Mortgagee Letter 13-14. There are a lot of you out there who, A, are taking advantage of money coming from each of your state housing finance authorities. That Mortgagee Letter had a lot of loopholes in it. It had a lot of things that were not clear. And this webinar was very helpful. FHA is going to be adding some FAQs to their website. I am going to write an article on this. I could create a 2-hour training program. There were so many good questions that these lenders came up with. Every state runs their housing finance authority money differently. Some of them, you know, it closes in the lender's name. There's all kinds of complications. And so a lot of you have shied away from housing finance authority money. It's a great opportunity. When you look at this mortgagee letter, before you jump into it, make sure you're fully informed on how this stuff has to work because there's lots to know. And the mortgagee letter is complex. So make sure you're following up with FHA's website and their FAQs to fully understand that how those requirements will work. And then last but not least, don't forget the comment period is still open for the QM proposed rule regarding some of these underwriting requirements and the DTI and repurchases. This is your opportunity to put every scenario out on the table so that it's clear from CFPB, if I have this happen in a loan, is it a repurchase, right? If I closed it completely as a QM and this series of events happened post-closing, would the loan still be classified as QM? You've got to get all that out into that comment space right now so that we can get some solid FAQs and responses from them. So you do need to, there's lots on that one. We talked about it on previous shows, so listen to other recordings to get some more details. But the comment period expires June 3rd, so you're down to just a couple of weeks. And the holiday weekend's coming up, Dave, so you know what's happening
That's
with
right.
everybody this week. All they can do is try and figure out how to close loans this week.
Get loans closed, yep. Comments?
So
I don't have time for that. I got to close loans. Yep.
Yes,
well,
close.
Hey, quick question. Has the MBA come out with any guidance on that? Because you had talked about last week or the week before about the fact that the MBA has not yet come out with it. Have they published any guidelines?
No, they haven't, you know, and I think that's one of the things I would hope for is that, you know, their comments are posted and then you all have something to just kind of say ditto, you know, click on whatever they posted. I will double check, but as of late Friday, I hadn't seen anything posted from MBA yet.
And I'm looking at the list of pending rules. Alice, this list goes on and on like a scroll out of, you know, the Old Testament, kind of, you know, that old the Moses movie. He just rolls this thing out. I'm looking at it. My gosh, it's endless.
Yeah, these are the rules that for the most part have been finalized. There are some clarifications that are needed, but that list that Dave's looking at, folks, is all the rules that become effective in that first part of January. You know, some are the 10th and some are the 18th. You need to just be thinking December 31st.
Yeah.
It's just easier to lump them all in the same category and try and figure it out, you know, over the holiday. Because, right, we're so effective and efficient over the holidays.
Yes. Yeah, right. Oh, my gosh. It's just amazing. And if you want this, folks, what I'm looking at here, Alice sends her notes to us. We sit and look at them. If you want that, you can get a hold of Alice Alvey by calling in at their number. But the best way is emailing Alice, A Alvey, A as in Alice, A, another A, double A, L V E Y at mortgage-dash.com. Hyphen U. Excuse me.
mortgage-dash-u.com.
Easy. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I better take another sip of coffee, go for an ad break. Alice, thank you so much. Looking forward to having you on the Bread Discussion when we have Austin Tillman and David Stevens talking about all that good stuff. And we'll be back right after the ad break to talk with Tony Garitano. A couple questions on what's going on in the world of technology, that another area that is just evolving so rapidly. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Hey, I forgot to tell you, we got the Profit Doctor in the house. He's going to be on right after Tony Garitano. So stay tuned. Find out what the Profit Doctor has to say. Tony Garitano, let me see here. Where are you? Better turn on your microphone. That would kind of help if we are talking, if I have the mic on. There you go, Tony. Good to have you with us. I've noticed, Tony, that there's a lot of technology firms hiring. And the question I have for you is, what makes a good hire for a technology firm these days, Tony? Lots of talent out there. Lots of questions.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting trend going on. I think a lot of very qualified people are looking for work and finding work these days. And the thing that I think every technology company really needs to think about is don't just hire the person that has 100 years of mortgage experience, and don't just hire the person that has 100 years of technology experience.
Yeah.
You need someone that has both, because the business is changing, so we need a new approach. So a technology background is great, but if you don't know the business, you're not going to make a good hire for a mortgage technology company or any other company in the mortgage space today. You have to have a good mix.
So how do technology firms translate a new hire into company growth? I mean, any guidance you can provide our listeners and what they should be looking for?
You know, there are some good examples. I think, you know, we saw about a month ago that VerPak brought on Cy Brin. Cy Brin used to be at GHR and Metavante, and then Progress in Lending just broke the news this morning that Nancy Alley, who used to be at Xerox Mortgage Services, is now with ISGN. And I think that, you know, if you want to translate new hires into revenue for your business, you have to market those new hires first off, but you also have to give them the flexibility to actually make a contribution to your company. You know, if you're going to hire someone new, then you have to listen to them to some extent. If you want to keep things going the way they're going, then you don't necessarily need a new hire. So I would say if you're going to hire someone that has a good mix of mortgage banking and technology experience and really give them a voice in the company and listen to what they have to say and try new things. And now's a good time to test things.
Well, you know, the profit doctor's on the phone, and he's always got some thoughts about hiring technology. He has certainly seen, you know, Andy was a CFO, CPA, and he's served at a leading position. And a lot of the technology components oftentimes report up or have a direct connection to the chief financial officer of an organization. So, Andy, I was going to see if you had any comments regarding hiring a technology. I know you're close to technology and a big user of technology. Your thoughts on this?
Well, absolutely, Dave. You can't run an operation today without having a robust technology infrastructure. And that robust infrastructure has to be based on reasonable workflows. It can't be an ivory tower workflow, and I think that's the point that Tony's making, in that you have to have the experience to know what workflows make sense. And you also have to have the technology know-how to be able to understand change management within a system, configuration, implementation, training, all of the elements that come together to make a technology deployment successful. And surprising to me in these days, given that this is an issue in my 30-year career we've been dealing with forever, and it still seems to be a problem, that we can't deploy systems well. And there's mortgage companies all over the place that have failed technology deployment implementations.
That's so true.
And it's most often because they underestimate the complexity, they underestimate the resourcing, they don't plan out the implementation strategy effectively, and they think that their existing team is going to be able to absorb all the extra work. And we recommend people plan on hiring a full-time person, or at least two, and you can't just hire anybody. What you got to do is somebody that's already there to redeploy some of their resource to someone else so they can be available 15, 20 hours a week to work on building out the systems, because even the mortgage banking has become so complicated that the systems have had to be complicated, and there's so many variations or permutations in workflow that the systems have been designed to accommodate a lot of variability, so basically kind of out of the box but customized.
Right.
And so you have to have somebody there to implement it. No LOS today that I know of, and Tony, correct me here, is really ready to go out of the box. There's some that are close, but for the most part, they've got to be customized. The fields have to be worked. The screens have to be worked. The field relationships with the screens and the interfaces have to be worked. So it's not simple. It's not easy. It's essential. You can't work without having it, but you've got to have a good one, and you've got to have it implemented well. So expect to increase your IT infrastructure staffing cost, because you're going to have some people on board who understand this and can maintain the system going forward.
Which, Tony, I think is why you bring up these points. Go ahead, Tony.
That's right off the top of my head. I need to think about it more.
No, I agree with Andy. And the only thing that I would add to what he said is that you also need buy-in on this new piece of technology at every level. I mean, I've run into a lot of companies that have failed implementations because the various executives in the different departments don't want to change, and upper management doesn't make that change mandatory. So you also have to make sure that you work closely with the heads of each department in the lending institution, get their buy-in, and upper management has to be willing to step in during key moments and say, look, you know, we've discussed this enough, and this is what we're doing as a company.
Tony, it's so true. Andy, you just were in a firm recently where they bought one of the major systems, a high-profile systems. Don't want to mention the name because it's not the technology provider's problem. But they've been working at making an installation, getting it active. But did I hear you correctly? Over a year, Andy, and it still wasn't operational?
That's right. That's right. And there's not just one. There's probably 20 where the LOS provider came in, sold the software. And I do fault the LOS sales team, irrespective of the vendor, a little bit, because the competition is, oh, yeah, you turn it on and it runs. It takes a little bit of time to get it configured, and then it's off and running, because the president, the decision maker, wants it done now and just wants yes. So the salespeople are drawn to just say yes, when the truth is this is going to be a pain in the butt. This is going to be a lot of work. It's going to cost you a lot of money to get it resourced. We're no different than anybody else. But if they tell the truth and the other guy's saying, oh, no, it's easy to deploy, they might lose the sale. So there's this conversation of honesty relating to the deployment of a technology system that I wish the LOS salespeople would just be honest about what it really takes to get a system running.
And it involves hiring some people. Tony?
Yeah, and also I think it's funny that they say it's easy to deploy, and it may be easy to deploy relative to their competition, but that doesn't mean that it's easy to deploy.
Exactly.
So, you know, you have to qualify your responses and your questions both way around. But it's definitely, I think Andy's spot on.
Well, the prophet doctor has a tendency to do that. Sometimes I don't always like when he's spot on, because he tells me things I don't want to hear sometimes. But that's like a lot of prophet doctors. They tell me I have to lose weight, you can't eat these sweets, and you can't, you know, you want to lose weight, but you keep eating these chocolate chip cookies. Like, what's the problem, you know? And so the prophet doctor tells me those things, but I don't want to hear. Tony, thank you so much for taking time to join in. Folks, you can go over to Tony's website, www.progressinlending.com, and get more insights. Also, you can email Tony at tony@progressinlending.com, or his phone number is 203-529-3131. Tony Garitano, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to contribute so much to this broadcast. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Always a pleasure. And, folks, we should also say we're the proud winner of the Innovations Award that Progress in Lending awarded us. And I'll tell you, if you think that's an easy award to get, ooh, go apply for it. It's very thorough in its analysis. Prophet Doctor, good off-the-top comments here. Do you have anything for us? I'm looking at the clock. I want to get on to our guest, but I want to give you a few moments to expound as you so do with the profound amounts of wisdom you got. What you got?
Well, listen to you, Dave. Thank you very much. Well, one of the things that I enjoy about getting together with you weekly, as we do, given our relationship at Partners in this firm, is that
friends.
You were talking about eating well, and that you say, well, you know what, you can't eat that chocolate, you'll gain weight, and how much you don't like hearing that. So what I've learned is a solution for that is I just join you, and we have a Rocky Road Brownie together.
We have Rocky Road Brownie. I know. It is true. Well, everything in moderation, but I think I've kind of crossed the line of the moderation there, Prophet Doctor. So it's always
people don't realize that's actually true, but
it is actually true. We actually do the brownies every time we get together, and then we argue with it. Do we want to have it? No, yeah, we do. So go get it. Andy,
so,
go ahead. You have a thought?
Yeah, a couple of comments actually. I wanted to talk about surprises just real briefly. Had some guests over at my place recently, and they came over, and one of them had this cute little dog, and so the cute little dog had kind of run of the area, and I was wondering, kind of crossed my mind, yeah, I wonder if that dog's, you know, house trained, and didn't really think twice about it, and I walked into my office and missed stepping in dog poop by about an inch, barefooted. Got up this morning, walked into the office, dog poop. So I'm thinking, oop, that would be an unpleasant surprise. I wouldn't have liked that. And so,
that warm stuff going between your toes, it smells, yeah, I'm no kidding.
You know, that's a fat tail. How often do you get dog poop in your office? So I was thinking about that, and we recently had a client who was relying on CPAs to provide them with some information about tax issues. And this is relating to loans held for sale. Mortgage companies have loans held for sale on their books. A lot of companies have chosen fair value election, which means that you put the loans held for sale on your books at fair value and you do some accounting entries to make it happen. Some companies have chosen to not do that. But the thing that's the stepping in dog poop is that those loans held for sale, the unrealized value in those are taxable, even though you don't have to put them on your books if you haven't made the fair value election. So I'm getting kind of deep in the weeds on the accounting stuff, but the point of it is the CFO needs to watch this stuff.
You are the profit doctor. We expect you to get deep in the weeds.
Well, you need to prepare for this kind of stuff. You need to watch out for stepping in dog poop because it's all over the place when you realize it or not, and the best way to plan for it is to expect that it's going to happen. And so a good CPA, good CFO is going to anticipate these events, understand the complexity and the nuance. And this kind of circles back a little bit to what Tony was saying in that you got to hire people who have some experience in the business. We've worked with the folks who have tried to hire CPAs as their CFO with no prior mortgage or lending experience. And,
right.
And it's, you know, as much as I hate to say it, it's almost always a disaster. The learning curve is so steep that unless they can walk along with somebody who is experienced to get them up to speed, it's going to be a real challenge. And we actually are helping some clients do that, get their CFOs up to speed. But the other point I wanted to make, Dave, in segueing into our hot topic today, you know, every year we get our financial statements from our CPA auditors. And those financial statements are going to the regulated depositories who are our warehouse line lenders. Anytime you submit a set of financial statements to a regulated depository, it's particularly as it relates to complying with any kind of debt covenants, if those are misstated or misrepresented, that can become and is considered loan fraud. So it's really important that the financials, both interim and annual, that go to the lenders are correct. And so
yes.
As it relates to that, the thing that's important to realize is that those numbers that the CPAs come up with that goes into those financial statements are going to be pretty close. I mean, they're going to be no material misstatements because that's the whole point of having the CPA do it for you. If you look at the financial statements and you look at the category called mortgage servicing rights relates to the value of the servicing that you have on your portfolio, and it's going to be adjusted to market value. And if you look at a mortgage company or commercial bank mortgage servicing rights portfolio, the value of the MSR relative to the principal balance of the servicing is going to be less than a point. It's going to be like 0.7 to 0.9, maybe up to a point, maybe, but rarely not. So usually the CPAs and the financial statements that go to the regulated depositories where if we're wrong, we're committing loan fraud, say that the value of the servicing is about 0.8, let's say. So the thing I don't understand then is if the CPA say that the value of the servicing on the financial statements, subject to all the bad things that happen if they're wrong, say it's 0.8, how is it that the big investors can tell me that the value of the servicing they're buying from me is 2.5%? The SRP tables say that the servicing is worth 1.7, 1.9, 2.2. How can that possibly be?
How can that be?
When the CPA say it's worth 0.8, and then the aggregators are saying it's worth 2.5. I think
we've
got a serious disconnect in the world, Dave, and I don't know if it's turned upside down on which side, but I want to know the answer.
Well, we're going to get the two experts to come on right now. We have got with us on the broadcast, again, coming back by popular demand, Austin Tillman and David Stevens, two people that are very dear, near and dear to our hearts because they're so smart. Andy, I surround myself with guys like Andy and Alice and everyone because, you know, I suffer from average intelligence, so I get around really smart people. Well, the two guys we got on the radio broadcast, Austin Tillman and David Stevens with United Capital Markets in Denver, are two guys that can help us unravel all this, Mr. Schell. So, Austin and David, good to have you back on the broadcast.
Good morning, David. How are you?
Good to have you back. Well, you remember a couple of weeks ago Andy asked a question that he's just now starting to address or that we're starting to talk about there. Do you remember what that was?
I remember it well. And by the way, the last comments that he just made were really a subset of that question.
Yeah, really. They begin to look at it. So we see what we have for these premiums out there. What can that really be true that we're seeing 250 basis points? What is real out there?
Well, absolutely. 250 basis points is not realistic. You know, the big aggregators tell the producers on their quote sheet that they're being paid a servicing release premium, and that number can be anywhere up to 250 basis points, but absolutely not. It's absolutely not true.
Well, let's toss it back in to Andy. Come on, Andy. Bring it on. Bring on all the questions.
Okay. All right. Well, how do I ask this question without – but how can it be – I think I've seen it printed on an aggregator's rate sheet, the pricing grids. And so how can they say one thing? How can they say they're paying 2.5 and pay something different? How can that be? I don't understand.
Andy, this is Dave. You've hit on one of the biggest secrets of mortgage banking that's been hiding in plain sight for decades. One of the first things that mortgage sellers should look at and try to understand on the pricing grids is the par price adjusters.
Okay, well, let's go deeper than Dave. Let's explain more what par price adjusters are.
Okay, it's an adjustment to the service release premium for loans at, quote, par prices.
This is getting complicated. I need Alice to help. Alice?
Yeah, Alice, we got to get you
well,
to jump
that,
in.
Oh, no, I'm here. Well, that seems simple enough. We all know what par is, right?
Well,
we all know what par is.
That's where the trickery starts. You know, when we took our college economics and finance classes, we all learned that a par loan has a rate that requires no discount or premium. A par loan would sell at 100% of the loan amount. Not 102 or 99. At least that's what we're taught. However, if you deliver a loan to one of the big aggregators, the SRP is going to be adjusted downward if the loan is a par loan.
How big might that par adjuster be?
50 basis points is not unusual at all.
Well, that's a lot. So par is not really par, like I learned in school anyway, and my first years in mortgage banking, right?
No, at least on pricing grids, it's become a marketing term, not reality.
Well, I think this is news to a lot of people.
Well, Alice, you're not alone. We estimate that around 80% of the people that we advise don't know this before we go through the math with them.
Wow. Well, I think that's more than half, right?
Yes.
So 80% of the people don't understand.
It took a CPA to figure that.
Well, par has been thrown out the window, so maybe 50% has been.
Well, you know, I'm interested to get deeper into this as we're starting to realize that what the SRP table isn't really what it says it is, and I want to understand this better, but so how long has it been like this? How long has this been going on?
Andy, it's been going on for 20 to 30 years. We're not sure who dreamed it up first, but it's been pretty common for a very, very long time.
Okay. So if I start with the 250 basis points for my SRP and I need to add back the 50 basis points for the par adjuster, then I'm now down to 200 basis points SRP. So that seems way better than I could do with the MSR, so if I held on to it, but well, is there more to the story here?
Well, there is. I mean, it's a little bit of a shell game. What if I told you on the same loan that they were going to pay you 101 for the loan, and you could sell that to the Fannie Mae cash window for 103, a 2 points difference, both servicing retained.
Okay, well, keep going.
Well, it's not complicated. They pay you around 2 points less than you could sell the loan to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae, or to the MBS.
Well, if that's true, then why are so many people still selling to the aggregators?
Well, for many sellers, they're just not comparing the all-in price to what they can get by selling direct to the GSEs versus the prices shown on the aggregators' pricing grids.
Why is that?
Well, it's pretty simple, but it's hard to do on your own. You start with a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae security price. Then you get to the mortgage price, And then you can add or deduct the buy up or buy down grids, apply a buy level or loan level price adjuster, or one or two or three, and then finally add the value of servicing. And most producers don't seem to own a model that does all that math.
Well, what do you suggest that they do then?
Well, we think it's pretty easy to take a first step to test it. We would suggest you work with your favorite GSE and get an all-in price quote to compare to your aggregator's all-in price quote on both a servicing release and a servicing retained basis. Now, markets move fast, so you need to do it right when you're locking the loan.
Well, that seems fairly simple to do.
Well, it really is. The problem comes to developing a system to calculate a best execution on a loan-by-loan basis.
And so do a lot of companies contract that out?
Yes. Bigger companies with a strong staff of analysts would build their own model and tend to do this. But most people use a best execution consultant. The profit doctor could actually help people build a model to test the premises. I don't know that he sells systems to do this, but where you figure out the MSR value is you take the all-in value and compare that to the MBS value, and the difference is simply the SRP.
Yes. And actually, thanks for mentioning that, Dave. We actually do that and have done that, built models to help people adjust back to the truth. So, and as it relates to that, let's get back to the truth. The original question was, when calculated using all the facts, all the pieces, all the parts all together, what are originators really being paid for the release premiums?
What the whole program is about, that question right there.
Well, Andy, it's obviously changed a lot. Prior to the meltdown, people were getting paid in the range of 150 basis points for 25 basis points of servicing fee, which we thought at the time was adequate value. But now 25 basis points of fixed rate GSE mortgages, the servicing value we get and calculate anywhere from nothing to 40 basis points, which is a very big shock for people. Now, there are a few loans with some special characteristics that are getting as much as 70 basis points, but frankly, no one is paying anywhere near 250 basis points. That's a 10 multiple, and it's just not happening.
So that's quite a bit less than – isn't that quite a bit less than what the servicing is worth?
Well, it is, and that's why we see more and more people, more and more companies deciding to retain servicing when they understand and do this math. So 30-year MSRs today, when you book them, are somewhere between 80 and 110 basis points. Again, depends on a whole series of factors, and even with a sub-servicer, the seller servicer can generally make more money and have more equity by selling directly to the GSEs and the aggregators.
Okay, so we're talking about the market value versus the anticipated future value coming together, and it sounds like the anticipated future value might be more than the market value, that's what people are wanting to hold servicing. But when boiling all this down again, then what's the bottom line?
Well, I'll take that. There are a lot of complicating factors, but all in, we estimate that you'll make around 50 basis points more by selling direct to GSE cash window versus selling to most aggregators. Of course, that's generally and recently, but the best execution is always changing, and originators need to always know the best X.
Okay, so that's in basis points. Let's turn it into dollars so people can really get their head around this point.
Okay. If you produce, say, $20 million per month, 50 basis points times that's $100,000 per month or $1.2 million per year. That's real money.
Austin, is that all cash?
Well, this is where it gets a little complicated. If you're retaining OMSRs, originated mortgage servicing rights, MSRs are future long-term cash, while SRPs are short-term cash. You actually get it day one. We find most producers selling at the cash window ending up with a little less initial cash than they would have received with an SRP. And again, that changes from day to day depending on the cash window. However, producers are just starting to retain servicing, and they usually only retain a portion of their production until they can build up enough cash for maintaining servicing.
What if they sell servicing release to the cash window? Then they're likely to make more cash flow than selling to an aggregator.
That's absolutely correct. And generally, it's applied to the average production.
What do you suggest that a producer do that is just trying to understand this issue better?
You know, we'd be happy to help them look at some of their loans. We've done this a number of times. There are best execution consulting firms who'd be happy to help them. And again, Andy probably could do this to do the same. But we'd be happy to help them with their own actual execution options.
Wow, great, great. Thanks for helping us better understand this complex issue more completely. And as I recall on another show, I heard another expert say that hedging MSRs, hedging mortgage servicing rights, hedging the balance sheet value of the servicing will always cost money over time, but can make money in the short term sometimes. And I know you guys are experts in servicing hedging, so is that right? I thought that you told us that your hedges make money.
Yeah, you heard us right, Andy. We heard that same comment. By the way, the guy that said it is a really smart guy and a good friend of ours, but he got the equation backwards. In fact, over time, our MSR hedges make money, but there will be occasional quarters when there might be a small loss. Our long-term clients all have overall hedge gains in substantial amounts.
Wow. Well, now, I know that you've explained this before, but how can that be true? I mean, when I heard someone else say that hedging will cost, then it seems easy to believe, but help me understand.
Well, remember, we talked about two different styles of hedging, the insurance approach or the portfolio approach. Again, the insurance approach, everyone's bought insurance, and it always costs money for you're paying for options to offset your loss exposure. With a portfolio approach, which is what we use, you buy assets, and they're earning assets, and the price behavior is inverse to your hedge assets. So essentially, you have an earning asset in your MSRs, and you have an earning asset in your portfolio of hedges, and yet their price performance is inverse.
Okay, I get the inverse behavior from the pipeline risk management hedging, but can you be a little more specific about this?
Sure. We use Treasury futures and options as our foundation for hedges. We use the futures, I'm going to say the words duration, but the futures for the duration of the MSR and options to bend the curve, if you will. These positions throw off interest spread and also earn options premium. In addition to that income, when rates go down, the long Treasury positions increase in value while the MSRs lose value. The real trick is getting the right ratio of hedges to offset the risk in the MSR positions.
Okay, so what's the scale of the earnings from the hedges?
Well, for instance, if you have an MSR investment of $10 million. These days, currently, our hedges would throw off $1 million per year to hedge that position.
Wow, that's a lot of. Wait a minute, that's a lot of money. That can't be true, can it?
Yeah.
Well, it is. We can show the results of one of our public clients to anyone that's really interested in checking this out.
So how can that smart guy on the other radio blog be so wrong?
Well, we know he wasn't directly involved in the MSR hedging at his prior company, and they did have some mixed results. We don't know the particulars, But subpar results, when we look at them, are generally the result of making bets against the market by lowering or raising coverage ratios, essentially hedging the hedge. There are a lot of other common factors also, too many to talk about here, but you know, typically that's what we see.
Are there others doing things similar to your method that our listeners can look at to find out about?
Well, we think Wells Fargo is the gold standard. They're the gold standard for portfolio MSR hedgers. Quarter after quarter, they post net profits from MSR hedging activities. And you just have to look at Wells 10Q for any period since 2006. You'll find less than a handful of quarters that there weren't overall gains.
Does United Capital Markets do the same thing as Wells does? Can they expect the same results, your clients?
We can expect the same results. Our traders came from Wells, and we have the same approach. However, Wells' positions are so huge, they're forced to use many more markets than just the treasury market. They have to spread their positions around between every market and still risk moving markets when they adjust their positions.
So if Wells is so big that they can become a market leader in driving the direction of a market, then what if they move before you? Does that impact your performance?
Well, a giant advantage to us and our customers is that the treasury market is so liquid and transparent that the price performance remains predictable by any classic models used to price options and futures. You can contrast that to a market like the MBS TBA market, which is relatively illiquid at times, and a little guy can get crushed if he's in line behind, well, really the Federal Reserve these days, Wells Fargo, and the other elephants in the room.
Okay, well, so let me put you on the spot here just a little bit. So can I say that your clients always make money from their hedges?
No, we didn't say that. Perfect hedges. There are no perfect hedges. And for instance, when the yield curve is inverted, which happened a couple of times in the 2000s, our hedges will generally have a small cost. Also, every hedge has basis risk, where the changes in the MSR value are not correlated to any hedge. Because we use treasury futures and options, we talked about carrying options premium receive from our hedges. Generally, these are enough to offset any basis risk, but I will tell you it's not always true.
Wow. Well, you start talking about basis risk and doing the treasuries and options and all this other stuff, and you know we need to keep talking about this. I still have questions.
Well, we know it's tough to cover it in a short radio show. That's why it usually takes us three or four sessions using actual portfolio data, giving every decision maker several opportunities to ask their questions. It's hard also to not have the graphics that we do when we're working with a prospect to help them understand this.
And I got to jump in because you guys sent me some graphics. I said, I got to have you guys back on. You got to explain this. And you sent me these graphs and pictures and go, Dave, I don't know how to do this without showing these graphs. Folks, you can. I think my kudos to both of you for being able to get through this as well as you have today. But you really do have some charts and some numbers that you can lay out in front of people to show them exactly what they're leaving on the table and how much can be gained by starting to retain servicing. So the big question is, all these people out there that are listeners that want to get into it, want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach you, your website, and your contact information?
Well, the website is, again, I think Paul Mullis said three W's, so www.ucm-inc.com. Or you can call the main number 303-268-8402. We'd be happy to talk to anybody about this. This is a sensitive topic, and candidly, you need to go through the math to really maximize your company.
Without question, the drums are starting to play, which signals we are at the end of our time. But I want to say thank you to both of you to get a hold of you. Repeat that phone number one more time, because I've got an idea they're going to be calling you. One more time, 303?
268-8402.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for being a part of this valuable information that you shared today, and is really hopefully it'll pique some interest for people thinking about getting into it. Folks, we are going to be back next week. We got David Allison coming back on and talking to us about loan subservicing. Great broadcast. Appreciate it. Also, say a special thank you to our sponsors, United Guarantee and Alamode. Tune in. Go to our check out our website, www.lickinonlending.com. Appreciate you guys. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.